Okay, folks, let's talk money. So I want to start off this episode with some statistics about how Hollywood films are usually funded, and actually less about how and more about like what the actual cost is. So the average cost to make a movie in Hollywood is about $100 million, which is real cute. It's about $65 million for the production cost and then $35 million for distribution and marketing costs. So that's kind of the average, which means that then for the film to just break even, they have to obviously recoup $100 million to the box office, and no one just wants to break even. So it's a large ask for that sum of money. Sundance, which is a film festival I'm sure you've heard of, even if you're not familiar with movies and film, I'm sure you've heard of the Sundance Film Festival. In 2014, they said that for independent films, the average for a feature was $750,000, but that was being conservative. So obviously, a lot less than that $100 million mark for a studio movie. And then I wanted to pull out some of those low-budget indie films. I was really curious about, okay, what are some of the least expensive independent films that did really, really well in terms of recouping what they spent and then, you know, obviously making money on top of that. And you might be, if you were around in the 90s, you definitely know Blair Witch Project. If you weren't around in the 90s or weren't tuned into that in the 90s, definitely give it a Google. It was kind of a phenomenon at the time. And what's amazing about that particular film is it cost $60,000 to make, and then it grossed almost $250 million. So as far as money goes, success. And then I wanted to see, you know, that was, I'm actually not sure if that was a scripted thing. It was kind of its own genre of horror slash, I mean, I wouldn't even call it documentary, but you know, somewhere in there. I wanted to see what a scripted feature would be like how well an independent low budget feature would cost. And I found that Rocky, which was made, I think, in 1977, the first one, it was in the 70s for sure. I think it was 77. It cost $1 million to make, but then it grossed over $200 million. So another huge success story. Obviously, $1 million is much more than $60,000 that Blair Witch spent. But again, just amazing things you can do on a low budget if depending on the script and all and all of life kind of coming into alignment for your film. So I wanted to kind of start off this episode with that framework around talking about money and talking about a budget for something like what I did, which was a short film, an independent short film. So out of the kind of studio budget costs of maybe $100 million or so for a movie, then there are also two other categories that films can fall into, which would be low budget or micro budget. And I think the exact numbers are completely debatable, but low budget is typically identified as $2.5 million or under, although I think there's some, I've read some articles before where they call a $5 or $6 million budget a low budget film, and obviously compared to $100 million, it is. And then there's a micro budget film, which is less than $25,000, and that is obviously what we made with Screen Test. So that's kind of the background for what I'm going to tell you about the budget and the making of Screen Test. In the last episode, I told you that I kind of figured that I need $1,500 to make this. Then McKinsey came in and Allie came in and started saying, like, you know, you don't want to sacrifice this. You really want to go for that, X, Y, Z. And we started putting all the pieces together and it started looking more like $3,000. So here I am in January of 2020 with a one-year-old and, you know, my husband and I are both working and we have our day jobs and we work hard, but we don't really have $3,000 just kind of at the ready to spend on a short film. So I was looking into, you know, how do people fund films? I kind of feel like I know, but I kind of feel like it's a mysterious process that I have no idea about. And there are basically four different ways that I have found that you can fund a film. So the first one is funding from investors, obviously. And by the way, let me just say, this is outside of a studio environment. So just completely talking about funding independent films. So you can become funded from investors going around and pitching your plan to folks with money. Like literally that's it. And asking them for money and giving them kind of the business plan of how you think you're going to recoup your their investment and then how they would get paid. It is absolutely a business plan. More than an artistic plan, what is insofar as when you're talking to investors about spending money on your movie. The second one is crowdsourcing, which you've probably seen a lot of. Kickstarter, Indiegogo, there are a bunch of different platforms where, I mean, even Patreon, I think, although that's more of a running subscription, but I think you can do projects as well. I might be wrong with that, but crowdsourcing is a really popular way. So instead of having just a few major investors, you ask for a lot of people for usually typically some smaller donations. The third way is grants, and you can find out, you can actually get some pre-production grants and post-production grants depending on where you are in the process, and then self-funding. So, and that's just, you know, spend your own money. So those are kind of the four main ways. And I wasn't sure what to do about the whole funding from investors thing. So I kind of crossed that one off my list right away. I didn't want to do crowdsourcing because I felt like I would want perhaps to do that in the future. And I hadn't shown people yet what I could do and why they should trust me or why they should want to be involved. So I was kind of thinking like, you know, that could be a route, but maybe we can keep it limited enough in financial scope that we don't have to do that. And we can kind of save it for later when we actually really need a lot more money. Grants, to be quite honest, I don't think I knew about that at the beginning of the process. Maybe I would have applied for some pre-production grants. But the other part of it was like this thing moved really fast. On January 1st, I had this talk with Craig. By January 6th, I was reaching out to people. And then a week after that, like kind of 2 weeks into January, we were like, okay, let's go and let's get this done in a month. So the grants didn't even come up as something that I might even, like it wasn't even in the back of my mind. It was nowhere. I wasn't even thinking about it. So that left self-funding, which again, no one just has even though $3,000 is not a lot of money, in film scope, it is a lot of money in life. And then the budget, although we don't have a final, we're still paying for things in post-production and wrapping things up and marketing and film festivals are coming down the pike and all of that. It ended up being over $5,000, and we'll see what the final number is. So the way we paid for it was me and Craig and McKinsey and Allie put some money into it, put some charges on our credit cards, and that's kind of how we did it. We were like, all right, let's get a loan from this credit card company and pay it off, you know, when we can. I also, just like in complete transparency, I also took out a short-term bridge loan from my parents that I could pay back to them over 6 months. It was small. It was for $1,500 because I wanted to make sure that I had cash on hand when I was paying people the day of the shoot, and I didn't want anything. I just didn't want anything to go wrong. So they loaned us that money up front, and then I paid them back over time to square that away, but make sure that folks had cash in hand as soon as we had wrapped the project. So, you know, I mentioned it's over $5,000, still a really small amount of money for film. And I want to just note that if you're starting out and that sounds like a lot of money, it is, but it's doable. And especially if you have a group of people like the four of us who are like, okay, we're putting our money into this, and we're going to kind of get creative with credit cards and we're going to get creative with that short-term bridge loan. If you have anyone in your life that can help you like that, that's an immense privilege and helpful. And I just want to say that we got actually a great deal on everything. So even though that sounds like a lot of money to, it sounded like a lot of money to me in the beginning. Now it sounds like, wow, we did a lot with that amount of money. I feel proud of that. You know, we got a great deal on everything. The negotiations that went down on everything that we could negotiate, from literally from catering to equipment to, I mean, and everything in between, we really got a lot of bang for our buck. So that was really helpful. So I want to kind of break down our budget and where we spent the majority of our money, because I didn't know that this is where it was really going to go. And there were things that popped up for me that I hadn't even thought of. And I like to think of myself as a planner, and I Google a lot of things that I don't know to find out. But, you know, there's something that is to be said for just like throwing yourself into it and learning as you go. So the majority of the money was spent on four different things: the location rental, the equipment rental, the certificate of insurance, the COI, and music in post-production. So those were the four main areas. And then the rest of the money was used for cast and crew, the post-production team, catering, props. I didn't really include this in the actual film budget, but I did after all have to pay like another $250 for the tow truck fee from getting my car towed during a production meeting. So that was cool. Maybe I can write that off in my taxes. I don't know. I'll ask my dad. But those were the main areas: the location, equipment, insurance, and music. And those are kind of areas where, you know, we did negotiate a bit on the location. But as far as like licensing and insurance goes, there's really not much that you can do there. So I wanted to kind of give my four or five ideas of how to keep your production costs low when you know that there are certain kind of fixed things that are just going to cost a lot, and how you can kind of bring those as low as they can go without sacrificing the look and the feel of the film, and write something that really helps you just maintain a low budget when you don't have a lot of funding or capital. So the first thing I would suggest on writing something to keep your budget low is to write something without huge location needs and keep the setups minimal. So like I told you in the first episode, I wrote something that was a mockumentary feel that would only need to be kind of supplemented with B-roll. And the reason that I did that was because, first of all, I thought originally that I was going to shoot this thing, and I've never really shot anything professionally before, so I knew that like I needed to keep it simple for my own skill set. But it also meant that our setups could be really few and far between, because if people are just sitting and talking to camera, it's the same setup, some small lighting adjustments, but that's about it. We're not, you know, we don't need a grand you know, park with lots of extras and a lot of people and a lot of set dressing and all of that. So keeping it minimal and kind of straightforward is one way to keep the cost low eventually. The other thing that we tried to do was to shoot it as efficiently as possible. So that kind of goes along with, you know, writing something without a lot of huge location needs. We wrote, I wrote something that was about 15 pages long, and that typically they say is like an hour per page, so you would assume 15 hours. But I again tried to write it in a way that it would be minimal setup, and we could like really make the shot list super, super efficient because we could just pop an actor in, pop them out, keep going, keep rolling. So we actually shot, we had a 12-hour day on set, but we actually only shot probably for like 9.5 or 10 to 10 of those hours because we had time off for lunch and set up and breakdown. And I think we were in the location 7 to 7 on a Saturday. So literally did all the work beforehand of, I mentioned in the first episode, I did the storyboard with my baby's crayons because we were trying to keep costs low. So we didn't hire a storyboard artist, although that would be amazing to do in the future. And I did it myself. We went through the shot list with Alexa, our amazing director of photography. We kind of knew exactly what we wanted and how we wanted it to run and what our time was and, you know, when people would need to be called in and how we could stagger things to make sure that also that we weren't wasting anyone's time, but everything was, you know, surgical, economical, and we got in and we got out as fast as possible. And that helps because if we even had to do, you know, let's say we did a 12-hour day on set, but we actually needed 2 more hours. That's a whole new fee for another day. Plus, you're asking people who you're not paying a lot of money to come in another day. And, you know, it's one thing to kind of get up and say, all right, this day is dedicated to this personal project that someone's doing. And it's another to be like, okay, my whole weekend is gone. Especially when people are, you know, hustling out there. They're working their day jobs, they're auditioning, they're doing a lot of things. So just in a respectful way too, not just about financing, we wanted to keep the day as short as possible. So we did. The third thing that I think is really helpful and doesn't always happen and doesn't always work out, but if you can find folks to come on board that already allow you to borrow their equipment, that is huge. Like I said, our equipment rental was a huge portion of our budget, but it could have been even bigger if not for our amazing first AC, Darby, who had an Alexa Classic camera that she allowed us to film on. So that was a huge, huge lifesaver just that she was able to let us borrow her camera. So the things that we needed to borrow to rent were, you know, the lighting equipment and, I mean, a bunch of things that honestly I couldn't even tell you without looking off the paper what we got. There are some directors who are super technical and I am not one of those directors. So that was a huge win for us. So if you have a network of people who have equipment that can be borrowed, then great. And maybe throw them some extra money for the fact that they're doing you a solid, because it is really expensive to rent equipment. And again, just want to note that McKinsey, one of our producers, really negotiated an amazing, amazing price for all the equipment that we rented. So it's just, you know, it's an expensive thing to do to make a film, even a short film. And then the last thing is, you know, the insurance. We did not even think about that until maybe the week before shoot day. So that was an extra cost that popped up. I forget the exact amount, but I think it was almost close to $1,000. Like it might have been between $700 and $900 or so. It was a lot. I'm thinking it might have been $900. It was a lot of money that just kind of we like didn't think of it. And that's usually because someone usually has it and I did not have it. So if you can find someone who you're working with whose company does have a COI already, that's another place where, okay, you can save that money and give it to the people on, you know, on your project, or, you know, put it into marketing, or, you know, not have it to be for insurance. Because essentially it was like, okay, we were keeping the equipment overnight at the location, but should anything happen, we would have been on the hook for probably tens of thousands of dollars of equipment. So, you know, even though $900 is a lot for insurance, we were like, we need to pay this. So I want to share with you the financial guiding principles that we lived by during shooting this film. So the very first thing I was clear on was that there was no need to make the money back. If we could all kind of, the four of us, pitch in, use some credit cards, use some savings, and get kind of scrappy with where the money was coming from and keep it low, because there was obviously a, you know, a limit on what we, the four of us, could afford together, then we could focus more on making the film the best that it could be under the constraints that we had, without thinking about the marketing aspect of it and making it quote unquote marketable and quote unquote sellable and profitable, which, again, there's nothing wrong with that. That's one approach to the business, and there are some films where that, you know, that's the approach. It is a business. But for me, as I was starting out and trying out this role of director as well as writer, I really wanted to use this film to find my voice and find my opinion and point of view and learn. I mean, holy heck did I learn. And, you know, it wasn't about the money for this film, and maybe it will be for others in the future, but for this one it was like, look, there's no need to make the money back, so let's just know that whatever money we're putting into this, and it's an investment in something that might happen down the road in the future because we made this film, but it's not going to be direct a direct result from, you know, tickets or screenings and distribution and all of that. And, you know, that's just where I was with this film. But I think the important part of that note is just the clarity behind it. Just having clarity behind, are you trying to make money back or are you not? And if you're trying to make money back, maybe you can put more money into it up front because you think like, well, I'm going to recoup this loss. And that opens up a whole other set of questions about marketing and distribution, which I don't know anything about, so I'm not going to say anything about it. But, you know, that's where I was with this project. The second guiding principle I had was, you know, if the return on investment wasn't going to be money, what was it? And for me, I wanted to submit this to film festivals, and I wanted it to be a proof of concept for a larger piece or series. And if those two things happened, if I could submit it to festivals, and if, you know, we'll see what happens with festivals, if we get any good feedback or recognition, I do think it is, from what we've done so far in looking at it and working on it post-production, I do think it's a really good proof of concept for a larger piece. I feel confident in that. I think other people might feel confident in that when they see it, but, you know, who knows? This is how art works. You think you have an idea on something and then you put it out into the wild and, you know, reality happens. But for me, the return on investment was, those two things kind of coming to fruition, and also me just getting it done, saying, I want to do this. I don't know how to break into this industry. And because I have no idea how to break in, I'm not really in a position to be, you know, climbing the ladder in the typical way right now because of where I'm at in my life and having a baby and having certain responsibilities, then I'm going to try a different way. I'm just going to find another way in. The third guiding principle was for me to trust everyone around me so that they could choose the people who they wanted to work with. So, you know, McKinsey and Ali brought a lot of people in, and I trusted them implicitly to make great choices about not only the talent and artistic capabilities of the people they brought on to this project, but also the attitude and the intention and the spirit of bringing all these people onto set. I have an ego in a lot of ways, but, you know, one thing I will say is I know when I am not the smartest person in the room, and this was for sure one of those moments where I wasn't the smartest person in the room. And because I was so trusting of McKinsey and Ali, because they're just two amazing, amazing women who could bring in amazing people who could then say, like, you know what, I want to bring so-and-so on and build my team from there. You know, everything kind of up-leveled. So if you're starting with a small team and you trust each other and you, you know, empower each other to make the moves that you think are right, then I think you actually end up getting so much out of your team than you could have, you know, done had you micromanaged every little decision. And then the fourth guiding principle was just like, do what you can as much as possible on your own. For me, that comes down to the marketing and that kind of social aspect of it, you know, as in we're not outsourcing this part of it. We're doing it on our own. I did not edit it, and seeing what our amazing editor, Margarita Lucas, could do, I'm so glad I didn't even try because she's brilliant. So, you know, I'm saying like the editing, we didn't sacrifice the beautiful editing that she did so that I could, you know, do it myself. But the things that I could do myself or McKinsey or Allie could do themselves, we did that. So being clear on those guiding principles was really helpful in just saying, okay, we know where to spend the money and where not to spend the money. And I want to say too, the financial constraints that we put on ourselves for this actually really lend themselves to this, you know, COVID time of production, because like, what is this moment in time if not restrictive and restricting and limiting? You know, it's like, and I've always felt that the more limits you have, the more your creativity gets to kind of breathe and flourish. With too much money or too much time, there are too many choices. And I think that putting a constraint on the money you have, for me at least, is actually a really helpful way in getting something done and accomplishing something, because you have to be nimble, you have to be flexible, you need to keep costs low because you don't have any other choice. And I think that skill set happening right now, at this time when we're going to come out of this COVID moment, hopefully soon, and things are going to shift, and money in even in studio features is going to shift. I think if you are a director or filmmaker who can be super nimble and make a lot with a little, you are going to be at an advantage. Also, I just want to say that the people who inspire me most are people who do, I don't want to say they do a lot with a little because I don't know how much money they spend on things, but are work within constraints, you know, like Toby Wegwe, the musician. He has some incredible music videos that are like one shots, which one shots meaning there's no cut. They just shoot in one shot. And that is actually really technically difficult. But the concept itself is constrained and really beautiful and gives you time to absorb his words and absorb and let the kind of words and music change even as they don't change. So definitely look him up if you don't know him already. I mean, he's pretty well known. And then also Saint Lennox, who's another musical artist that I just love. His music is so gorgeous and unexpected and surprising. And then he has these music videos that are shot on an iPhone with text. And it's just a simple concept that when you put a couple of things together that are really simple, but you marry them and let them intersect, all of a sudden you have this third thing that is just incredibly special and surprising. So these are two directors and artists that I look to as inspiration. And I would encourage you to find other artists in addition to them who are doing simple things that still create an impact, because we think everything has to be this huge spectacle. And I mean, not to be super metaphorical, but I feel like this time with coronavirus and COVID and being at home and everything is making us realize how much just our inner life is kind of spectacle enough. Or at least mine is. I hope you're doing better than me. Anyway, that is the episode for today. I don't want to go on too much longer, but I hope you got enough information from how we figured out our budget and where we spent our money that you can kind of see how you might do something the same or differently. And you know what? As I'm always going to ask, please leave me a message on anchor.fm/thebreakbreakdown. There's a little button where you can leave a message and tell me what you think. Tell me if you have any ideas, if this episode brought anything up for you, if you have advice, if you've done kind of a constrained financial plan for a film and you have some more advice or thoughts to share with our audience, please, please let me know. And as always, please subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. It really helps get the word out about it. And share with a friend if you think someone could benefit from this episode about money and budgeting. And thanks for being here. I really appreciate it. Talk to you soon.